He's fought once in 8 years. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, he ain't fight too frequent for my liking. I need to be solid proof that people are going to show up, and he's a consistent pull-out merchant.
They want to give me a pay cut. They didn't want to offer me a title shot.
You know, this fight, Woodley did absolutely nothing. Okay, he did absolutely nothing, and until the last round.
I think you should shut up. You're embarrassing yourself right now. Are you still drunk right now? Are you still drunk? Or what? What's going on?
No, but I'm going to go.
What is going on with him?
I'll go out on an all-night bender and still beat you, pal.
And this is a guy who needed TRT because he would have died without it for so long. Now he has four times the amount of a 30-year-old, and he's 10 years older than me, pretty much. So he is doing something. He is somehow cheating.
And let's remember, the guy has history. Big history.
Good evening.
That's life. Poke a pistol in my bed today.
In the bed?
On my bed.
But is it really bed, or are you still sleeping on a cot in the basement?
It's still a cot.
Yeah, that doesn't really count. Like, our puggle's like peed through like a bedspread, through a sheet, through like the mattress pad.
Wow,
that's good.
That's a hell of a piss.
Yeah. When she pisses, she does a really good job. Very thorough.
I think he's just spritzing. I think they're like, oh, you know, it's a sign that your dog misses you.
It's a sign your dog's a jerk.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I've missed people. I've never, like, my mom's gone, I don't like shit on her pillow. Cause, oh, Mom, I missed you. This is the only way I'm going to show my appreciation.
Lucy, when she was a puppy, she did this thing. It was called, like, submissive urination, where if a new person came into the house, she would come over and get all excited and pee all over the floor and the person's feet. So that was good for about a year.
If I ever go on a date again, I'm just going to greet it. Hi, how you doing? Hold on. I got to pee on your feet because I'm really nervous and excited about this moment.
Yeah, it's weird, because in one way it's kind of cute, and in another way it's embarrassing, and in another way you just want to kill the dog all at the same time.
Oh, and that's the motto, really, of this show here, which everyone's listening to, and Matt can take away now.
Yeah, so hello and welcome to MMA and Stuff. This here show is available on halfguarded.com, iTunes, and Google Play. My name is Matt Grady, and I'm joined by Michael Coughlin Esquire, is it? Is that what you go by?
I would never write Esquire, but I am technically, that would be a proper designation.
No one knows what that means, by the way. We come to you.
Lawyer.
But why is that the saying at the end? It's like a shitty magazine also, right?
They stole it from us, I'm sure. Yes, of course they stole it. I don't think Esquire was around the 1700s.
We come to you every Thursday discussing all the latest news in the world of mixed martial arts, and we also like to talk about stuff occasionally. This week we're going to tackle the fallout from UFC 209, the George St. Pierre and Michael Bisping presser, another USADA failure, some recently announced fights, and this weekend's upcoming UFC fight night from Brazil. So let's backtrack a little bit to this past weekend. On Friday, March 3rd, we actually had a Bellator show. It was number 174 from the Windstar World Casino in lovely Thackerville, Oklahoma. You actually called it Thackerwood last week. I don't know if you remember saying that, but Thackerwood is even – it is funnier. This wasn't a major show by any means. Prior to the show, two fights were actually canceled when Mike Rhodes and Joe Taimangalo missed weight. We're going to get to UFC 209 later, but they also had a bigger, more important guy missing weight. We did, however, see the first inaugural Bellator Women's Featherweight Champion be crowned when Julia Budd beat Marlos Kunin by TKO at 212 of the fourth round. After the fight, Kunin actually retired from MMA. Any thoughts on that fight and Kunin's career overall? I know you were a fan of hers.
Yeah, I actually kind of forgot this was on. Like, I forgot that I watched, I should say. This Bellator, like, you're going through the whole thing and going, I know I watched something. What the fuck was it? Oh, he's going to tell me. Okay, there we go. I remember watching this, and I was just surprised at how dominant Julia Budd was. Marlos Kunin has been a world champion at 45. She's fought most of her career there. She's been a very good fighter for a long time. Julia Budd's kind of been there. I've never seen her at that level, but she just seemed like she was much, much better than Kunin. And maybe the fact that Kunin retired afterwards is part of that, that she's just done with this now. It sucks. You know, I always liked her. I always thought she had a cutesy personality and a good style, but she was kind of wrong place, wrong time. If she'd come along, you know, 5-10 years later, she'd be right in the thick of things with the UFC and have a chance to be a decent star, but instead, she's kind of that bridge between, in some respects, like between Gina Carano and Cyborg / Ronda Rousey, as far as like kind of like the girl, and then Ronda came right away, and now we're here, and no one really gives a shit. Sorry, Marlos. I mean, I like you, but nobody gave a fuck about this fight. I mean, nobody cared about the UFC doing a women's fight, and this one was actually probably a little more prestigious just because it actually had two featherweights in it, which a novel concept in women's MMA, but yeah, what are you going to do? That's life.
Another person no one cares about, Cody Pfister also retired after his win on the undercard at this show. I think we touched on this last week. Pfister is still hoping to get into the MMA business, become a MMA entrepreneur, and overtake Bellator and the UFC. So good luck there, Cody Pfister. On Saturday, March 4th, we had UFC 209 at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. Attendance was 13,150 people with a gate of 2.4 million. So the attendance wasn't great. I think T-Mobile can hold like 20,000, so it wasn't even really close to sold out. But a decent gate of 2.4 million for, you know, Wonder Boy and, what's his face? Tyron Woodley.
The champion.
Yeah, so I apologize. If he hears this, he's going to be pissed.
He's white, Tyron. He's white.
Reportedly. Prior to the show, we lost the co-main event. I know you like to argue whether it's a semi, but I call this a co. The interim lightweight title fight of Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson was canceled Friday morning, which was the day prior to the show, because Khabib had trouble with his weight cut and was rushed to the hospital like around 4 a.m., according to his manager, Ali Abdelaziz. Ferguson was offered a last-minute fight with Michael Johnson, but turned it down because it was not going to be for the interim championship and because he was also asked to take a pay cut by Dana White. What were your thoughts on Khabib missing weight? I mean, to me, I don't want to say it's a catastrophe, but it was the biggest fight of his career, biggest stage, was going to possibly win this interim championship and go on and likely fight Conor McGregor at some point. And the guy's like 6 pounds overweight and doesn't even make it to the scales.
I think it just tells me that his next fight should be somewhere around mid-June. He'll definitely be down weight at that time.
Because of Ramadan?
That's the joke. So, yeah, I mean, it was a disaster. It's just, he's missed weight before once. But he says, you know, he's not like habitually missed weight or anything like that. Ali, his manager there, was involved, and they took him to a regular person hospital instead of calling the UFC and saying, hey, we need doctor's advice or whatever. And I kind of understand why they did that. Because they're probably sitting there thinking, you know, look, we just get to the hospital, we get this taken care of, we don't tell the athletic commission, because if they find out something's wrong, they're going to cancel the fight. But, you know, you got a grown man who hasn't eaten in 2 days, worked out a lot, and he's sweated out probably 10 or 15 pounds of water, and you go into an ER, the doctor's going to look at you, he's going to be like, I think you need some fluids. And you're not going to be able to convince him, no, doc, really, just give me something else. Give me a medicine that won't show up in a drug test. Also, I might die in the next 5 hours.
Well, yeah, I mean, shortly after the fight was canceled, Dana came out and said that they should have contacted the UFC. And I don't think he used the term ghetto hospital, but he was basically saying they went to some shitty hospital that's known for being shitty in Vegas, and they immediately gave him an IV. And I don't know what the UFC's doctors could have possibly done for Khabib, like in his hotel room or however they were gonna try and manipulate things, or they would make it like a catch weight at 162 or what they would have done. But Dana's response was funny because it's like, how dare you go to the hospital and get checked out?
Yeah, I read a lot of that as basically Dana's, like, because him kind of saying, look, you went to a hospital that didn't understand who you are as a person, you know, that you're a fighter. Because, again,
right.
Dog, stop.
Wow.
Oh, stop it, you butthole. He can sit there if he wants.
Very territorial.
He just gets weird. He's got a B-O-N-E. So, yeah, I mean, look, I can't really say that Cedar Sinai or whatever the hell hospital he went to is a bad hospital. Again, they saw a 29-year-old man in great physical shape showing up with his kidney shutting down, no water in his system. Like, I don't think you need to graduate from medical school to be like, eh, I think we're going to just give you some more water. So, sorry. Dog, I'm tired of this. You're going to be hate. I mean, it sucks. As a fight fan, I really wanted to see the fight. I mean, that's it's bullshit.
A bummer.
It's a bummer for everybody involved, and I don't blame Tony Ferguson for not taking less money for a very tough fight as well. So
if you were Ferguson, you would have turned Johnson down for less money?
Oh, yeah.
Even though you were trained and ready to go, you trained for 3 months or whatever, you're there in Vegas, you're the co-main, you say, you know what, forget it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Really? Okay.
Because
you wonder, like, Michael Johnson with no training camp, probably not in the best shape. You don't just do it because you're there and ready?
To me, it's the money thing. Just them taking
okay.
– if they were going to give you the full money or at least your full not negotiated show pay, forget about pay-per-view points or something like that, then I would go for it. But otherwise, you're basically saying I should take less money and risk even more money if I lose just so that the UFC can make more money. Like,
sure.
Especially if it's Michael Johnson. Like, if it was, like, Nate Diaz or something, you'd be like, fine. I can see that because it's a big name, but it's Michael Johnson. This guy who's already actually beat you. The only loss you have in the UFC. But, it's a guy who's good, but nobody's going to give a shit if you beat Michael Johnson on short notice. You have everything to lose and really, monetarily, apparently nothing to gain, especially given that apparently he got a bunch of money and it wasn't enough to cover all of his very expensive training costs.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Ferguson story now, which came out just today, was that I'm not sure if it was Dana or UFC management or who the exact person was, but essentially he was told he was going to get his show money, which was, for this fight, I believe $250,000. And then he was wired money today, you know, whatever, 4 days later, and it's less than half of that. So he's not too happy. He's griping about it. As a general policy, I believe the UFC will always pay guys their show money based on their opponent falling out last minute and not being able to find a replacement. But a lot of times when you hear these stories, it's lower level guys who might be getting, you know, 10 and 10 or 20 and 20. It's not guys up at $250,000 usually where the fight falls apart and they pay them their entire show money. So my hunch is they don't have, like, a written policy on this. They kind of just wing it like they do with a lot of things. And that's kind of the fight business in general. Do you think they should have paid them all $250,000? Do you think they should have paid them half? Or do they owe them anything at all?
Well, I know that, like, legally they don't owe them anything. The Athletic Commission's actually very clear that a promoter doesn't have to pay a guy if his opponent misses weight and the fight's canceled. That's actually one of the specific rules. On the one hand, you can say, oh, they're really rich, and it's, you know, a couple of 50 grand here or there is going to make a big deal to them, and it really isn't. And the truth is, the pay-per-view probably didn't really suffer for losing this fight. Maybe it suffered a little bit, but for the most part, anybody interested in this
all those fight, Dagestani buys?
You know, those are fake buys. Those are fake buys because they come from Russia.
Okay.
Otherwise, I mean, they can just say no to him, and what's he going to do? Forgetting that he's under contract, the amount of money that they don't pay him is still going to be more than that he would have ever gotten in Bellator. And, like, mm-hmm. That's just show money. Like, he's in his prime of his career. He's right on the cusp of getting into that high six-figure payday scale, and he's got to just take it. So they can just kind of do whatever they want. I think a happy employee is a good employee. Yeah. I don't think there's anything. I think there's something to be said for goodwill, but at the same time, always remember that if they paid him, they offered him $10 million and he accepted and the paper and did one pay-per-view buy, he wouldn't sit there and go, oh, well, you know what? You guys took a bath on that. I'll just give back most of this money. Like, he's going to keep as much as he can. They're going to keep as much as they can. And you just got to kind of play a risk-reward as far as how much you want to needle the other side.
Well, Ferguson had a funny line somewhere that Dana loses $250,000 on craps on the weekend, but that's like life-changing money to me. And that seems to be the approach a lot of these guys are taking. It's like they know Dana's worth $300 million, and it's like – I'm not saying Dana's not worth $300 million. He didn't earn it. He didn't kill himself and create this huge juggernaut of a company, which he did. But at the same time, it's like – there's a little bit of truth in that where it's like I can see somebody feeling shafted when they trained the 3 months. They were there. He made weight. He weighed in. He went to the ceremonial weigh-ins, told people about the pay-per-view. It's going to be a great show. Was a company man. And feels like he was told one thing and then got something else. I can understand why he'd be a little bent out of shape.
Yeah, and it's easy just to say, yeah, this is part of the new ownership. Because it felt like things like this didn't really creep up under the Fertittas. People would complain. They would complain about their pay, but that was, you know, negotiated pay in advance. As far as doing little extra things, you know, the old school, the way that everything was run, I always just keep in mind that Dana's done a lot of shit for these guys that nobody hears about. We all just found out about the stuff with Cerrone and Dana spending all that money for him. And, like, he takes care of people, especially bigger name guys who have really gone out there and performed a lot. They've never really nickel and dimed guys like that, and so I got to figure this has got to come from somebody else.
Yeah, maybe. So where do you go with the two of them from here? Do you try and rebook this fight for, you know, 210, 211? Do you tell Khabib to F off and you do something else with Ferguson? Where do you go from here if you're Sean Shelby?
I rebook it for UFC 211.
Okay.
210, I don't think that would be doable. That's kind of a quick turnaround. 211, though, they should have enough time. If you're Khabib, it works out perfect timing-wise because he can fight, then immediately do Ramadan afterwards. So he's not going to miss any time from the UFC's schedule, basically. So win or lose, it's fine that way. And the truth is, they're still number one and number two in the division. And I think that the weight missing right here, it just makes the fight bigger when it happens. It's drawn more interest. Now there's more drama and intrigue. We have a little bit of a backstory where before there wasn't one. Now we, you know, you have something for ESPN to talk about, and it makes it seem more important because it just builds up a fight for another 2 or 3 months. So I just rebook it, and, you know, if Khabib misses weight again, so be it. Such is life. But what are you going to do, not book your number one lightweight just because he's missed weight once every once in a while? Like, we're not talking, you know, Anthony Johnson in his prime, or, you know, Johnny Hendricks here. We're talking to guys who missed it twice out of a dozen fights or whatever in the UFC. I don't know.
Right. So, in the main event of the show, Tyron Woodley defeated Stephen Thompson by majority decision this time, 48-47, 47-47, 48-47. This is one of the more boring title fights in UFC history that I can recall anyway. I know there were some
– Tim Sylvia.
Yeah, Shamrock Severn. But anyway, there was very little action throughout. Both guys were super tentative. It looks like they were both concerned that the other guy was going to knock them out, which kind of makes sense if you think about fighting. You probably don't want to get knocked out, but there was very little action. I think one round was like Thompson had the striking advantage, like 8-6 or something.
Yeah,
like,
something like
it
that.
Was pretty dull. Did you think this was like the worst title fight in UFC history, or is that overblown?
That's overblown for sure.
Okay.
You just got to go to Tim Sylvia, Andre Arlovski, the third one at UFC 61, like when they barely touched each other for 5 rounds. Tim Sylvia, Jeff Monson. There's a bit of a pattern that emerges in Tim Sylvia fights. There have been some boring fights over the years. I wrote that piece for the main page there, and I do believe a lot of it, basically, that this was the same fight that we saw at UFC 205, just that rounds were in a different order. You know,
I agree.
Two rounds were good to very good, and 3 rounds were boring, and the only thing I can, you know, I believe more Wonder Boy than I do Woodley, because as I wrote, if you're Wonder Boy, you've got all these decades of kickboxing, you're this great striker, the whole fight's on the feet, and you're not doing anything. Like, you're not landing anything that would be considered a significant strike. He basically jabbed with his toes a lot. It was crap. And for Tyrone Woodley, I think that it's been underreported, but Tyrone Woodley's a very, as the kids would say, he's a woke individual.
Stay woke.
Yeah, he's very aware of what's going on in the world. He's he's very willing to comment on race relations and view of black men in society, as far as fight fans are concerned. I think he's aware that the stereotype exists that black men are violent and do damage to people when they fight. So he wanted to break that stereotype.
I had not heard that theory. I think you're the first one to put that out there.
Yeah, so, the fight sucked.
Besides that one flurry in the fifth at the end where it looked like Woodley almost had him finished. And depending on the fight and where it is on the card and who's fighting, I sometimes that fight gets stopped. And it didn't, and obviously Thompson recovered and was able to finish the round. But if you look at both fights, the person who did the most damage was Woodley. But the you go back to the question of technically who do you think won this fight? Because I scored it 3-2 for Thompson.
I actually scored it draw because I had that fifth round.
You had a 10-8?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just despite what the athletic commission says there. Bob Bennett.
Well, I have no problem really. A lot of people think a 10-8 in that round is crazy, but I really don't, because Thompson did nothing in the round. Like, if Thompson was like had a little bit of an edge in the first 3 minutes or something and had some strikes of his own or did some damage of his own, you would be able to convince me more readily that it was a 10-9. I scored it a 10-9 personally, but I can see a 10-8 there because Thompson did nothing in that round and Woodley did the only damage.
Especially when, like, you look at rounds like 1-2 and I think 3 or 1-2 and 4, whatever it was, and you compare those to round 5, it's like, yeah, right. Not every judge wants to give it a 10-8, and if they don't, I understand why, but it really should be. We should be comfortable calling that a 10-8 when the other rounds are very clear examples of somebody's got to get 9, so we do. Those are 10-9 rounds. I think that at the end of the day, the right guy is still champion because, look, no, you don't have to take the belt from the champion in theory, but I do think there's something to Woodley went out there, beat a bunch of guys who are really good, and then he knocked out the champion in the first round. He made a definitive statement, I'm the best. And if Thompson had won this fight, I would not have walked away saying, that's the champion. That's the best guy in the world. I would have thought, there's the dude that toe-jabbed him for a while there. I'd rather have Woodley as champion. I think he's earned it, even though Wonderboy would just be more of this shit. Just more people being confused, being tentative, and him being tentative because he's a counter-fighter, and everybody knows it, so they're just going to wait and go away, Wonderboy. Go away, you.
Or fight somebody else. I mean, he's had exciting fights in his career. This is just a styles clash, and neither guy wants to commit. I mean, Thompson's had entertaining fights with different guys. So
I bet Richard Spencer loved this fight until the very end. Then I bet he was angry. Actually, I bet everything in his life was around this fight. Fucking Nazi-looking motherfucker doing karate. Tyrone Woodley is right on that scent. The Nazi-looking guy who does karate fighting the big, strong black man. It's like Dolph Lundgren versus Mandingo.
Sort of. After the fight, Dana buried Woodley's performance, and Woodley responded that he'd like to see how Dana and all the fans that were booing in the arena would fare in a fight against Thompson. Is this a good argument?
Usually I hate that argument, but I do think that there's something to what he was saying in that, look, you guys have me fight Wonder Boy. This is a really tricky, tricky matchup. And Woodley even said it, and they talk about it, like, he brought in a lot of people to mimic that style. This is not like you went out there and you could have done something, but you didn't. you know, like you see guys just coast, and you're like, come on, dude, like you should be making a statement. You're better than this guy. Like John Jones has done in his last couple of fights. You're just like, really? You just are going to coast with OSP? Come on. But yeah, usually it's a stupid thing to say, but this time I think he's right. I think that he's getting undue crap for this fight. I don't think it's all his fault. I don't know why nobody blames Wonderboy at all. And at the end of the day, you know, yes, he has to be entertaining, but as we just saw earlier that night with Tony Ferguson, they're not going to just give you lots of money. Like, if they can, you know, if you lose that title, Dana's not going to go, wow, Tyron Woodley, he would have probably made another $1 million or $2 million, $2 million, $3 million if he'd been champion for a while, but he went out there and he just put it all on the line. Ah, fuck it. His next fight's not for a title. He gets his pay cut in half. And whatever. Screw him. No.
I think that was part of the issue with the fight. Both guys knew so much was on the line. You're talking millions of dollars. You're talking maybe, you know, you're going to fight GSP next, or you're going to fight Conor McGregor next. Who knows how these divisions and the crazy matchmaking will play out. And that could be, you know, a $3, $4 million payday as opposed to, you know, $150,000 payday. Like, it's life-changing money. So I get where Woodley's coming from. He was being cautious, trying to keep the belt, but he can't get mad at fans who boo him for that performance. Like we said in the beginning, it's one of the worst title fights in UFC history. We're comparing him to Tim Sylvia. You can't have it both ways. Either you've got to accept you're going to get booed, and your fight wasn't, you know, entertaining. It wasn't fan friendly. And yes, you retained the title. You kept the belt. You did enough to win. And that's great if that's what you're going to do, but you can't be mad at people who are dissing the fight at the same time.
Yeah. And yeah, that's fair. And I'm sure that if you really got to him and asked him, he'd be like, yes, I understand, or something like that. But
beat the shit out of me.
I would hope that the fans also would understand, though. Like, there is something to be said for, yes, fans can react viscerally in the moment, and I do myself when something's really boring like that. But when you step back, you should be able to say, oh, okay, yeah, no, I understand. I'm not going to hold it against this guy. Like, I don't think it should be a negative. Now, it's obviously not a positive. He's not going to gain anything. But I'm not going to sit there and blame him too much for this. You know, we'll see what he does. Again, like I wrote, the last time at UFC 205, the fight was a perfectly good fight. And it was very similar action in this fight, just in different order. So, whatever. My life will move on. We have Vitor Belfort coming up in, like, 2 days.
In what replaced the Ferguson-Khabib fight, we had the new semi-main event where David Tamer defeated Lando Venata by unanimous decision, 30-27 on all three cards. I think this was an upset in most people's minds. It was a fun action fight. I think this card is getting a bad name just based on the main event, but there were some fun fights on this undercard and throughout the show. I thought
I remember very specifically thinking at one point, it was during the Rashad Evans fight, which was really boring. I thought people are going to shit in the show, but up until like this point, this show's been really good, and some of it's just been like legendary.
Yeah, no, I like the show a lot, and I just think you remember the last thing. It's that recency bias or whatever it's called, but where you remember the last thing, and that fight leaves a sour taste in your mouth. But this fight was great. Great stand-up. A lot of good scrambles. Tamer pulled off the upset. He really surprised me. I don't even really remember Tamer that much from his fights in the past, but he looked good against Venata, who was this up-and-coming guy who pushed Tony Ferguson to the brink and almost had Ferguson beat a couple times.
Yeah, it was a really good fight. It was just like it wasn't anything you're going to remember for the rest of your life or anything like that, but it was definitely entertaining. It was part of that was the way they matched up stylistically, but you got to give Lando a lot of credit. Venata just goes out there and he really throws down and puts on a show just by being himself. And my gosh, I don't know if anybody I've ever seen the sport that can basically no-sell punishment like he does. Like, a lot of guys get hit, and you think, okay, he's kind of tough, and he's shrugging it off, but you can kind of see the move a little slow or whatever. Like, they don't jump right into it. Like, he gets hit with stuff, and he doesn't even seem to care. It's startling. Yeah. Good for Tamer for getting the win. It was, again, it worked out for him stylistically. I think the big thing for him was showing a couple takedowns here and there, which, you know, in the long run is good. I always think when you're ahead in a fight, if you can start doing something different at the end or even during the middle, it's a good thing. It just screws up your future opponent's game planning. But also keep in mind, everybody, all you fighters out there who are obviously not listening, look at what happened with Lando Venata here. He stepped up, semi-main event or co-main event. He went out there. He performed. He threw down. He was the reason this was a great fight. If he wanted to, if he was going to play it, be boring, Tamer wasn't going to press it too much. But Lando went out there, and he really made this thing good. And I bet his next fight's in the undercard on a fight night. Like, he probably got $50,000 bonus for this show, but they're not going to bump his pay up another $50,000 for his next fight. He's not going to really probably get rewarded too much. Like, they're not going to bury him in that sense. He still has a job, but he's not going to be rewarded. And guess what? If he loses his next fight and the fight sucks, they'll look back and they go, oh, look, he's got 2 losses in a row. Yeah, he's at 40. We can just cut him. What do we need this guy for?
Yeah, time will tell. In another upset, we had Dan Kelly defeating Rashad Evans by split decision, 29-28, 28-29, and 29-28. This was Evans' debut at middleweight, his long, much-anticipated middleweight debut. He obviously had those issues with the brain scans and commissions not letting him fight. Nevada okayed him. And physically, Evans looked great, but he also looked a little slower and didn't have a lot of, like, aggression. Kind of seemed like Kelly's judo and Evans' wrestling kind of counteracted each other. And it was all just, like, striking. Not a lot of kicks, mostly just punches. And I thought Kelly just had a little more output and wanted it a little more than Evans did. Evans just kind of looked like he showed up and thought he could win the fight based on who he was.
Yeah, Evans kind of looked like a deer in the headlights out there. There was no indication that he couldn't have won this fight. He was quicker. He was able to stop Kelly's judo. He's, you know, looked in great shape. I mean, physically, he's the best I've ever seen him look in his life. But he looked like a guy that was gun-shy. He looked like somebody afraid of getting hit. And Dan Kelly didn't. And I think that was the big difference. Kelly was in a fight, and he was able to make it a fight. Rashad just wasn't good enough to win a point battle. Dan Kelly just kind of went out there and didn't care if he got hit. He didn't care if he got knocked out. He didn't care if he lost in that sense. And Rashad probably felt like there was a lot more on the line, and he's been knocked out before, and maybe he's just not feeling it. Or, you know, maybe all this shit with his brain got in his head. You know, he did have 2 fights canceled because of an abnormality in his brain, and he's had those issues in the past, and now he's out there, and maybe you're in the cage, and you go, fuck me, he just hit me in the head. Am I going to die? Is my brainstem going to come detached? Is this going to happen? Am I going to be the one? I can't die fighting Dan Kelly 3rd from the top in Vegas in the middle of April, or, sorry, February, March. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't want to die that way. Actually, I wouldn't mind dying in Vegas. That would be a good place to die. But he's probably got kids and stuff, so he doesn't want to lose that. So, I don't know. He's also an old man who dropped down. Look, dropping down a weight class can help you at a certain point in your career, but I think when people get really old and they start trying to do it, it always is more like, no, the problem isn't your weight. You're just old, like BJ Penn. You sit there and you go, oh, this is that carrot that's always been out of reach. What would Rashad look like at 185? What would BJ look at 145? These guys are, oh, they can rejuvenate their career. But it's like, if they'd done it a while ago, yeah. But the truth is that all the problems that existed at the higher weight that kind of made them unsuccessful exist at the lower weight as well.
I guess that Dan Kelly's old and probably not very good.
He looks like a dentist.
But he's 5-1 in the UFC. And, like, you look at his knee, like, it was all taped up and bandaged up. I saw some pics of it backstage. It was like a mummy, basically. It's like, how did this guy just beat Rashad Evans? And granted, Evans isn't what he used to be. Like, granted. But even so, like, good for Dan Kelly, this guy who got into MMA late, doesn't look quick, doesn't look particularly skilled, and he's 5-1 in the UFC. Good for old man Judo Dan.
He looks like he hunts elephants in the Serengeti for trophies.
What, like one of Trump's kids?
Because he looks like a dentist.
Okay.
The dentist from Minnesota that killed Cecil the Lion?
Yes.
It's a good joke. Move on with this shit, Kurt. It's not really short. Actually,
you just said it was good.
Most of it was pretty good.
Cynthia Calvillo defeated Amanda Cooper by rear naked choke at 3:19 in the first. Are you aware of what Cynthia Calvillo was doing prior to this fight? Like last week, what she was doing?
I think she's really young.
No, she's 29.
I thought she was 19. Oops, fuck that up. I thought she looked a little old for being 19.
People have said that before.
Yeah. You look much older than that. Your Honor, I swear, I thought she was 29.
She worked at the Cheesecake Factory. She's planning on leaving after this win.
Hey, I don't know. That's good food. I'm sure that's blasphemous to you, but I like the Cheesecake Factory.
That is not blasphemous. Cheesecake Factory is one of the most successful chains in the United States of America. Clearly, they are doing something right.
Does that apply to McDonald's also?
Yeah. I mean,
Arby's?
Here's the thing. It might not be good food, but it's a good business. Oh, yeah. And like anything, you can do this with MMA too, or writing, or music, or whatever. There's the art side, and there's the business side. The same thing works in restaurants and the food business too.
Did you see the movie about the Ray Kroc?
No.
Oh, I didn't see it either, but it just came out. I figured it'd be up your alley, you know? The guy who basically made McDonald's.
Yeah, I have not seen it.
It's pretty cool. Right here in my old hometown.
Nice. Very nice. Anyway, Calvillo basically did like a gator roll and then took the back, which I don't think I've ever seen before. You could probably
I have not seen that. What she did. What she did was she tried an arm triangle, and when it didn't work, she just kept it, but rolled with it, like you said, and took the back, got the choke. You can kind of see stuff like that here and there a little bit.
Is that something like only a woman can do? I'm not being like sexist because of like flexibility. Like I always feel like there should be like, because women are more typically flexible than men, certain things they could do better than men, but it doesn't always seem like it works that way in jiu-jitsu.
You do see more of those types of scrambles in women's jiu-jitsu, and I think a lot of that is, some of it's because they're flexible, a lot of it's just because there's very few brute strength grapplers from the women, whereas the men have like a lot of guys who can just wrestle you and control
right. There's
you.
Only one Gabby Garcia.
Exactly.
Unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. There were two of them. Oh, boy. I don't know if all three of us could be in an elevator at the same time. But, because she's big.
It would break.
Exactly. I think one of the problems actually with women is that they do tend to be more flexible. You see a lot of them being able to throw up rubber guard and things like that. But they're not dexterous. Like, you know, they're flexible, but they don't carry the strength with their flexibility. Like, a man can be flexible, but he still has strength in his legs. Women don't seem to have that same gripping strength that a man has with his thighs. I don't know why. Women have babies and things like that, and I assume all their legs are all strong because of that, but this is a good fight.
In the opener of the pay-per-view portion of the card, Alistair Overeem defeated Mark Hunt by knockout at 1:44 in the third. Impressive win for Overeem. I mean, this will probably keep him in the title mix at heavyweight. On the Thursday before the fight, Overeem came down with food poisoning, which he blamed on bad Las Vegas sushi. He actually ended up in the hospital twice, where he got IV fluids to help get him into the cage.
Did he call the UFC's doctor?
I guess so. He got this okayed. He got basically a TUE for it. But yeah, he had to go to the doctor twice and get an IV twice. In the fight itself, Overeem and Hunt were both throwing bombs, kind of headhunting, and both guys got rocked at various points. Hunt hit a couple nasty elbows.
with his back up against the cage on Overeem, and Overeem kind of stumbled for a bit, but regained his composure. Somewhere through the fight, Hunt busted his shin open too. He was saying he had a broken tibia, but I guess it's just a really bad bruise. Then he was just flattened by an Overeem knee to the chin and was out cold, just like starched pretty much. The one interesting part of this whole thing was at the post-fight presser, Dana went out of his way to thank Overeem for making it to the fight, because after losing the semi-main, obviously they didn't want to lose this fight as well.
Yeah, impressive performance for Overeem. I thought he would lose, and he didn't, so I give the guy credit there. He fought a very, very, very smart fight. He kept the distance and did a very good job with it. Hunt just couldn't get inside and land anything. And we saw why, though, because when he finally did occasionally in the clinch, I mean, it was just very, very short elbows. I'm using the word very, very a lot. Very, very short elbows that landed, and they did very, very much damage to Overeem there. Like, you know, Overeem got dropped, and almost to the point where I thought he was out. And then, he clipped Hunt with the knee. Hunt's got a great chin, but anybody can be knocked out, as we've seen in the past with Hunt. His chin kind of, it wanes. Sometimes it's really great, and sometimes Melvin Manhoff knocks him out cold. The thing with Hunt is that when he gets knocked out, like, he goes out. He doesn't get dropped a little bit. Like, he's out there completely conscious, getting kicked in the head, and he's fine, or he's dead. Made for a beautiful visual on TV. Overeem brings himself right back up in the mix at heavyweight. He even said so himself, I think, in the pre-fight interviews when he said something to the effect of, it's the heavyweight division. I get like one or two wins, and I'm right there in the title picture. Basically burying it. So good for him. He got his win, and Dana White said thanks for taking out that there evil Mark Hunt, because he was a pain in the ass.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where Hunt goes from here. I mean, obviously he's lost a couple in a row now, but...
How much do you think Dana is fucking praying to the god he doesn't believe in that Overeem doesn't fail a steroid test right now?
That would be perfect. That would be perfect.
Especially when you got the IV and all that stuff, and oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be something else. On the prelim card, there were a lot of good fights, a lot of good finishes. The one that stood out to me was the Darren Elkins fight with Mirsad Bektik, which I think we talked about before, saying that fight had some potential and it's lower-ranked guys in the featherweight division. But Elkins won the fight by TKO after like a punch and a head kick at 3:19 in the third round. But Elkins did it after, like, what could have probably been scored like a 10-7 first round. Like, he got his ass handed to him by Bektik. Like, had a nasty cut above his eyebrow, like one of those, like, gaping, nasty ones you see, once every 3 or 4 months. But a great win for Elkins, a good come-from-behind victory. A lot of people are calling it, like, one of the greatest comebacks ever. I probably wouldn't go that far, but definitely – Elkin showed a lot of heart and a lot of grit and was impressive in the way he came back against a really good guy in Bektik.
Yeah, honestly, this was one of the better come from behind wins you'll ever see. It's up there with, I mean, it's not Silva and Sonnen, because nothing ever would be, but this was just something special. Bektik was beating the shit out of him. He was so much better and quicker and faster, but he just kind of got tired as the fight wore on. He made the mistake of going to the ground, and that's where Elkins was able to get a little bit of space and make some positional adjustments. And eventually in the third round, after being dominated and probably, but definitely needing a finish, he pulled it out, and I just lost my mind going, holy cow. So a hell of a performance for Elkins, and I kept thinking that Darren Elkins... My joke was going to be Darren Elkins is like a Timex. He takes a licking and keeps on ticking, except for he's kind of uglier and crappier, so he's actually a Swatch. Then I looked it up, and Swatches and Timex are like the same amount of dollars. Like, they cost the same.
It's also like a 25-year-old reference, too.
Yeah, well, I'm old, so fuck you kids, you bastards. Nirvana was better than your music is today.
Oh, you sound like an old man.
I am an old man.
Debatable.
I hate the Jews.
Depends. That makes you old? I know young people that don't like Jews.
Really? I don't know anybody that doesn't like Jews.
I just made that up.
What kind of people do you hang out with? That's kind of disturbing. Richard Spencer.
Some of my daughter's classmates. They're crazy. The other fight, if you're going to go back and watch any, was probably Yuri Alcantara defeating Luke Sanders via submission with a knee bar. This was another, I would call this a comeback win too, although
Awesome.
It's not getting that kind of play because the Elkins fight came after it. And then obviously you had the main event of the show, which just ruined the whole show. So people forget these fights. But Sanders was like dominating this fight. Like he was beating Alcantara everywhere, took him down, beat him up on the ground. And then all of a sudden, like towards the middle of the second round, Alcantara just like caught this knee bar out of nowhere, just kind of rolled over and just cranked this thing, and Sanders had to tap out. Another like surprise finish out of nowhere that you wouldn't have expected in most cases.
Yeah, I thought both guys' stock was raised here. I liked the fight overall. It was there was a theme throughout this show. There were several other fights, and we don't need to go into them because they weren't really great, but there were a number of fights where everything was going one direction, and at the very end, boom, something either totally turned or exploded. Like, the whole show was basically based around the idea that at the end of the fight, something's going to happen, and it's really fun. We saw even the main event. I joked to you, you know, like, if pattern holds true, then it does. I thought this was sad in the sense that the knee bar Alcantara hit, you don't really see that very much in MMA. It's something everybody goes for, but because everybody goes for it, you don't really see it finished. And most people, you know, it can be used as a transition. So for him to catch it, kind of reminded me of when, like the last one like that was probably like Jim Miller where he tapped out Charles Oliveira. And in both cases, it looked like the guy getting tapped didn't know what was going on. Like they didn't recognize it or something. And I can totally see that Stevens is kind of newish and nobody expected him to go to the ground, and I think he got a little too energetic because he's doing well, and he's in there with the black belt, and he's like, fuck this, look at this. When you add in punches, my wrestling, I can do this. He can't handle this. This is a fight. This is in the gym, blah, blah, blah. But some of these guys are black belts for a reason, and we saw why. That's my
prior. I'm with you. I was just thinking where I was going next here. Prior to UFC 209, George St. Pierre and Michael Bisping appeared together at a presser in Vegas. Bisping showed up about 30 minutes late and probably drunk. Bisping immediately went after GSP, calling him a midget and a coward. And then GSP countered that Bisping was drunk and embarrassing himself. And I could be a total mark and an idiot, but this actually raised my interest in the fight a little bit. I can eat crow and admit that. Did you watch this press conference, this interaction between them, and what was your impression from it?
I did, and I thought it was fine. It did create more interest than there had been. It was all Bisping going into total dick mode, and you could see St. Pierre. At some points, it kind of looked like it was getting to him a little bit, but other times, St. Pierre's got this weird thing about him where he knows how the game works. He knows that he said it in the past that I played this type of straight man, and I need other people to be crazy, and blah blah blah. So I'm like, okay, you get that, but it doesn't work if the guy is doing a character and you say, hey, you're doing a character, but you're not very good at doing that character. That's Vince Russo-like. But it also tells me that the guy maybe did get to you because you're sitting there going, oh, well, you're just doing this character, but you are not very good at it, mes amis, mon ami, you are only one, not two. I like the way Bisping came across. He's always been able to do this. I genuinely did believe he was drunk, and I think that's the best way for Michael Bisping to do everything. The way
to fight drunk, too.
That'd be great. I think a lot more fights would be better if guys are imbibing substances. Make it like softball, where in between rounds you get a chug of beer. Oh, that would make for some mess. Poor Derek Lewis would never survive that.
I bet you he can drink.
Yeah, but he also shits himself in the middle of the cage. You add alcohol into that, and he gets hit in the belly. He's going to puke everywhere.
Maybe. I didn't think of it that way.
But I liked Bisping. I liked what he said. I liked how he handled himself. He basically addressed everything, and he just played up the, look, you're smaller than me. And he played it up, and he did it well. And at the same time, he kind of he did it in the sense of it didn't feel like he was diminishing George St. Pierre, because you can't. George St. Pierre's not, like, you can say anything you like. Normally you want to say, oh, my opponent's the biggest, scariest guy in the world, and I'm going to have to be at my best to beat him, so it looks good when you beat him. But you don't have to do it. You can say, George St. Pierre, you suck, you're a midget, you can't, you're not my level, you'll never be able to beat. You can say that he's awful at everything, because everybody knows he isn't. So you get carte blanche, and then you can do real trash talk without having to worry about hurting your buys. I don't think it couldn't have gone better if you're the UFC.
Yeah, no, it definitely drummed up some interest. I'm more interested in the fight than I was before. When they squared off, too, the size difference wasn't as much as I thought it was going to be. I kind of thought Bisping was going to dwarf St. Pierre. They only look like maybe an inch, two at the most difference. So, I'm more into it than I was. I still think it's a bad title fight, but I'm not as mad as I was last week. The MMA awards were also last Friday.
I don't submit this for consideration because I protest them.
All right. Well. Here's what I'm thinking. I'm going to tell you who won each award, and you're going to tell me if they got it right or they got it wrong.
Oh, okay. That, you realize I'm not going to know almost any of this. Like, I purposely avoid most of these morons, but let's go.
That's perfect. That's good. Fighter of the Year, Conor McGregor.
Oh, they do real awards also. in my mind, it was just like best cameraman, best story. I thought it was just media awards. Fighter of the Year, Conor McGregor. I don't have a problem with it. From an overall perspective, I would go with him. All the business, and he's the biggest guy, and he won all these titles and stuff like that. You could argue somebody like Cody Garbrandt or anybody else that had like three or four wins was undefeated throughout the year. Donald Cerrone almost from last year.
You're doing pretty good. The nominees were Bisping, Cerrone, Garbrandt, Miocic, and McGregor.
Yeah, and I think Bisping actually probably could have the second strongest case, given that he had two amazing fights, one great knockout, and he won the title. And he beat
some old guys.
He beat old guys, but from a name perspective, it's like the most amazing year you could ever have at middleweight. So,
sure.
But it's still Conor's year.
Okay, female fighter of the year, Amanda Nunes.
Sure. She won the title in dominating fashion, and then she destroyed Ronda. The only other option is Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And again, when you look at the totality of everything, factoring in star power and all that, nothing touches Amanda's year. If anything, she kind of gets docked a little bit because the fight with Ronda being so late in the year, you almost kind of forget that it was in 2016. But she ran through bitches and beat them all up. She's a fucking beast.
In theory, she retired Miesha Tate and Ronda Rousey this year. I don't know how you don't give it to her. Breakthrough Fighter of the Year, Cody Garbrandt.
That's why you don't.
Shit, it's a accent issue.
Yeah. A Breakthrough Fighter of the Year is Cody Garbrandt. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also nominated, Derek Lewis.
Ooh, that's...
Instagram account.
If you Derek include Lewis. His Instagram, which just blows me away at how good he is, yeah, then he would definitely get it over it. But then if you include Derek Lewis's Instagram account, he's Fighter of the Year, so you can't really go that far.
Time Magazine Man of the Year, Derek Lewis. International Fighter of the Year, which is a weird award. I guess that means anyone not from the United States?
Then wouldn't that have to, wait, wouldn't it have to be Conor then?
He did not win it. He was nominated but did not win.
So
it does not make sense.
So
I don't know I don't even know who votes on it. He was also nominated but did not win. This is fun.
Foreigner that Amanda Nunes?
Not nominated.
What race is it?
Dagestani.
Oh, fuck. Never mind.
What race would Khabib be? I get confused. White. So you say Caucasian?
He's from the Caucasus region.
Okay.
That's for Dagestan. Yeah, he's Russian. He's white.
When somebody says, okay, that's fine. Did you say race or what did you ask?
I said race.
I get confused between nationality, race, and religion. It's complicated. Fight of the year.
Do you think people worship Japan? They pray to China?
Some people worship their governments.
Yeah,
don't North Koreans do that?
Commies, you coastal elites. All praise be unto FDR and all your government machinations. Chips in my brain. You're wiretapping me. The CIA chipped my brain. This is sad.
Yeah.
I like Campbell's soup, though. It's good soup.
I hate Coke. What fight of the year?
Wait. Who is... Oh, yeah.
Khabib, how
is Conor McGregor the best fighter in the world?
These awards do not make sense. We're going to get into more that don't make sense later.
What
fight of the year?
Conor and Nate won.
That was nominated but did not win.
Then their second fight.
That did not win. Want me to just tell you?
Yeah.
Cub Swanson versus Tu Hochoy.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's fine. Yep. No argument.
Great. Knockout of the year.
Nunez over Rousey.
Not nominated.
Wonderboy.
It's obscure. Did Wonderboy do
some spinny shit to somebody?
Probably, but it wasn't nominated. Michael Page versus Cyborg Santos.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that one either. That is pretty brutal. Oh, that
a dented skull? Yeah, that's never happened before. Like, that sounded like a gunshot went off when you heard that. I didn't notice that at the time, but in the replays, that thing was brutal. Submission of the year.
Mackenzie Dern.
That was nominated, shockingly, but did not get it. Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Which I probably wouldn't vote for, considering how Conor is on the ground. Like, I don't know if that was that impressive, but
no,
whatever.
I wouldn't vote for it because, by that token, then there's no way that Michael Page should have won Knockout of the Year. Because, like, Bisping's knockout of Rockhold was higher profile. The only reason, Nate choked him. He just choked him out. He did a rear naked choke. It was like the first submission hold ever successfully pulled off in MMA. We're not talking anything revolutionary here.
We're going to skip that one because it's boring. Upset of the year. You mentioned it already.
I mentioned it already. Sword. Oh, Bisping over Rockhold?
Yep. Sean Tompkins Coach of the Year Award.
Who is it? It should be Greg Jackson. But I'm going to say they give it to Tom Kavanaugh.
John Kavanaugh.
Did he get it?
Yeah.
Good
job.
He did a good job, but Greg Jackson does more with different guys. I mean, I know Artem Lobov had a good year, but let's not get too carried away here.
He is in the main event this year. I don't even know what this means. MMA media source of the year.
I think that's their catch-all, so they can add in ESPN and Sports Illustrated and MMA.
This was all MMA-based sites that were not nominated.
Yeah. Us should be. But otherwise...
I think we would have heard about it. MMA fighting.
I ignore a lot of emails, so I make, especially if it looks like something I don't want to deal with. But yeah, otherwise, no. The real answer is actually probably like a subreddit where all the information actually comes from before some reporter grabs it and repackages it as his own.
Maybe.
Or BJPenn.com.
ENT imports.
Oh, fuck! I hate them. God, it's awful. All the fighters.
Well, I think the guy who runs that is the guy who did work for BJ Penn and then said Penn like was coked up and raped his girlfriend or whatever, who's a Playboy playmate. MMA journalist. of the year.
I know who got it.
Helwani. That's like the dumbest thing. Out of all these dumbass awards that, like, you can't take serious, award shows, whatever it might be, Helwani winning this thing is so irritating. Like, I get years in the past, he's like, whatever, the face of MMA reporting. But is he really a journalist? Doesn't he just interview guys and ask them questions like, how's your camp going? How's your family? Like, that's basically what he does. I don't see, and maybe he, like, broke the Lesnar fight, but that was going to come out anyway, and somebody just told him that. It's like, and on top of all of that, the UFC, he was on the UFC payroll, like, this year.
That's,
like, in the last 365 days. But the whole thing, like, is stupid.
Well, if you look
and
at
it's like, he just wins it based on name value every year. And it's like, in the years past, I can say, okay. But this year, when, granted, he revealed it, but he revealed that he was on the UFC payroll, it's like, come on. Yeah. Like, how do you nominate him, let alone give him the award for best MMA journalist? Like, it's the biggest sham ever.
It reeks of some sort of weirdo, like, the cult of these reporters, and they all double down, and they want to kiss ass and get in good. I think that's a lot of it. They see him as the big MMA reporting star. It's like, oh, yeah, that's a real high upside field there. Yeah, I mean, look, the dude wasn't even a reporter for most of the year. And if you want to look at what he actually broke, like, he did interviews. I did interviews. Mine were more entertaining, I bet. I didn't ask the same boring question. Oh, how do you feel? And, oh, he broke the Brock Lesnar thing? Actually, I kind of talked about it weeks before. And I don't bring that up, like, as a pat on my back. More to say, he broke the story, like, an hour before it was going to be announced. This isn't like he had the inside scoop on something big. Like, the guy who broke the biggest story last year was Darren Rovell, and he was just fed it. Rovell, whatever you say his name. He was just fed it on purpose. Like, he didn't break anything. He didn't cover MMA, but somebody called him up. He goes, oh, okay, I'll report that. And he went with it. So the biggest story is broken by a guy who probably didn't even really know what he was breaking. So whatever. Have your little award there, Canadian Jew boy. French-Canadian Jew boy.
It's quite the gimmick.
Gimmick.
Speaking of Ariel Helwani, on his show this week was Jorge Masvidal, and he claimed that he was given his next fight against Damian Maia because UFC management wants someone to take Maia out of the title picture, and he's their hitman. Is Jorge Masvidal delusional?
I think he's convinced himself that that's what his role is. And it's a good, you know what, it's a good gimmick. I'd run with it if I'm him. And he kind of went out there and he can be like, look, everybody knew Cerrone was their golden boy and I took him out. Everybody knows that Damian Maia is next guy. I took him out. I'm the guy. So if he wants to play, I don't know, company man.
Assassin? UFC assassin?
Yeah, that's fine. Look, I'm sure that right now Tyrone Woodley is sitting there going, please knock out Damian Maia. Please. Anything you do, I will pay you extra to do this. Like, yeah, I'd rather face the blown up lightweight who can't really wrestle as opposed to the scariest jiu-jitsu guy in the game. So, yeah, please, Jorge, here's some secret steroids you can't get caught with. That's why I look the way I do, even though, you know, I'm in my 30s. Oops.
If Masvidal and Maia fought 10 times, how many times does Masvidal win?
3.
Yeah, right? Like, I don't like his chances. But maybe it's given him some confidence and it'll be mind over matter. Daniel Cormier went on Instagram today to complain about the UFC
mind over
210 matter poster. You tell yourself, I'm going to beat this guy. They want me to beat him. Maybe it helps. They say sports is 90% mental, right?
And the other 10% is also mental. You know, I understand what you're saying. I just kind of like the mind over matter. Like, he's using psychic powers to will it to happen. I can just work hard enough and I'll make his hands come down as I punch. Yeah. Like MMA is like that book, The Secret. He'll will it into being.
I never read that. So anyway, Cormier, very upset about this UFC 210 poster. Maybe we can put a picture of it up somewhere, but Essentially, it's got, like, Rumble Johnson behind him, but, like, huge. And then Cormier in front, but much smaller. And Cormier did not like this. He thinks it's bullshit. And, like, he's claiming, like, who did Rumble pay off to get this poster done? Is there anything lamer than a former Olympic wrestler and, like, probably the second best light heavyweight in UFC history, like a real badass, whining about how his picture looks in a poster?
Yes, there is.
Tell me.
It's one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, one of the greatest light heavyweights of all time, whining about his poster and not understanding how the poster even works. He looks like the important person in the photo. He's the one that's in focus. He's in the foreground. It's the challenger looming on the in the distance is looking at him. Cormier is the focal point of the poster. Johnson's...
But he's smaller.
Johnson's coming after Cormier. Cormier doesn't understand...
A little guy? A Napoleon?
It would look really
weird. Is it a Napoleon complex?
Seriously, if that's a big photo of Cormier with the title and a little one of Rumble in the foreground, guess what? It makes it seem like it's about Rumble. The guy in the foreground who's right there by the words and everything, he's the focus. He's the important part. So Cormier is complaining that he's being promoted. He's just not smart enough to understand how promoting works, apparently. So whatever, you whiny. Just he seems like such a nice guy at times, but what a penis. That's all he is. He's just a penis.
Yeah. Sometimes he gets booed, and, like, you can't justify, like, booing Cormier over, like, Jones. Like, if you had to pick between the two and who you're going to boo, you got to boo the guy who's crashing his car and hitting pregnant women and having coke in his system and taking whatever dick pills or estrogen or whatever he's doing. But it's like, for whatever reason, Cormier just rubs people the wrong way, and you know when Jones and Cormier finally fight again that Jones is going to be the one to get cheered just because Cormier does shit like this.
Because Cormier's a dork. He's a dork, and John Jones isn't. And if you're in high school, even if you resent the popular kid and you don't like him because he's getting all the girls and he's doing all this and he bullies you, there's a part of you that thinks, God damn, I wish I could be really good. Not try and be cool and have sex with all the hot girls and play football real well. That would be great. And then nobody looks at Daniel Cormier and goes, oh, yeah, I wish I could be a little overweight and never really actually achieve my dreams. Yeah, that's really fun.
Speaking of guys who have never achieved their dreams and are a little overweight,
I'm right here.
We have another USADA failure to talk about.
Yes, we do. I'm not going to edit it. I'm too lazy to do it. You were right last week. It's too much effort.
Yeah, it probably takes a minute or two.
For 5 seconds of sound, yeah, it ain't worth my time.
Oh, man, you're so busy. Ben Rothwell has been flagged by USADA for a potential violation. Rothwell was scheduled to fight Fabricio Verdum at UFC 211 on May 13th in Dallas, but is now provisionally suspended. In response, Rothwell made the following comment. With the recent news received from USADA, I would like to take this time to let everyone know I have been under the care of a physician and trying to overcome a medical illness. I would appreciate the chance to show that I have not cheated, nor did I intend to cheat. Please hold your opinions of me until all the facts are out. I appreciate everyone's support as I go through the process with USADA. Mike, can you hold your opinions until all the facts are out?
Yes, of course. I'm an honest and fair man. It's very clear that he was just on diet pills. Duh. Obviously, that's what Ben Rothwell will get busted for.
Not penis pills.
Nope. No, goodness, no. A man like Ben Rothwell has no problems with a penis. He can, if he did, he can't see it. So he doesn't care. I have to go, though, and correct you. You made a mistake.
Okay.
The statement of his, I'll just read the last two or three lines because that's all that really matters. That's where you made your mistake. You didn't read the full transcript.
I apologize.
I have not cheated, nor did I intend to cheat. Please hold your opinions of me until all the facts are out. I appreciate everyone's support as I, hold on 1 second. Yeah,
I'll take no two double whoppers. Yeah, no, two of them, and the large shake. Okay, yeah, yes, of course I want, yes, make it large. Okay, yeah, thank you. Through the process with USADA, thank you. So that's
you made that statement at the drive-thru of Burger King?
Yeah.
I had no idea. I totally missed that.
Yeah, it's underreported because he's a big, fat, fatty, fat, who's got enough money and he keeps cheating. This is the second time the dumbass has cheated. Fuck him. Get out of here. You're ugly, you're stupid, you're creepy. Like you're he's the creepiest dude in MMA. And that says a lot. There's been a lot of creepy dudes, but with his weird dancing, and he just seems like the kind of guy that, like, the girl keeps turning him down, and he doesn't get it through his head, and, like, he just, like, traps her in the corners, he looms over her, he's like, don't you understand? I'm really nice. Come on! And then he snaps and, like, hits her head against the wall like a white Boo Radley or something like this. You know, Boo Radley is what I think. He's like a Wisconsin Boo Radley and loses it. He's like, I'm nice. And he just slams her head against the back of the headboard. And then people come in and he goes, I'm sorry. I'm just a nice guy. And I'm going to dance for you. So go away for 2 years, Ben.
For me, the bigger question, bigger picture here is, should USADA be announcing these things before the appeals process has been completed? I don't know if we've really got into that. But, like, he's got this chance to appeal, but now that this fight's in jeopardy, he's suspended for the time being, and he's going to go through this appeals process, which who knows with the B sample and however that whole process goes down. Should they be announcing it before? Like, shouldn't they wait until the appeals process is over before Rothwell becomes known as this cheater? And I'm not just saying with Rothwell, I'm just saying in general with every fighter.
Yeah, if I looked at it just in a vacuum of the UFC and the fighters and didn't know anything about sports, I would be like, oh, they should keep it quiet right now. You know, innocent until proven guilty. But all sports announce the suspensions immediately and then proceed. Now, it's different because MMA doesn't have a union as a counterbalance. But I think you just kind of have to because otherwise the fight with Verdum is probably going to be pulled because who knows if the appeal will be done by then. We've seen appeals that take months at times. So maybe it would take a while, and people are going to be like, wait, why? And soon somebody asks why, you can't, what are you going to say? You'd be like, one of the guys has a problem. Then they'll call, but hey, Verdum, did you have a problem with steroids? Nope. Okay, everybody, well, there's only one other fighter in the cage that night. So, yeah, it's just going to happen. It's one of those things where I could sit there and waste time and energy over it, but it's never going to change. So might as well try to fix it within the system they got, I guess.
A few upcoming fights have been announced. We've got Demetrius Johnson defending his flyweight title against Wilson Hayes. At UFC on Fox 24 on April 15th. And then also added to that Fox card is Jacare versus Robert Whittaker. So that Fox card's filling in pretty nicely. I think that's the one with Watterson and Nama Yunus on it as well. So we've got a title fight for DJ. And obviously Jacare's the favorite in that Whittaker fight. But, you know, two higher level middleweights, too, for free.
Yeah, interesting fights all around there. It's the most fun anybody will ever have in Kansas City, I'm sure. Jacare just kind of comes out of nowhere. You forget, you know, that he's there. He just fought and just won very impressively against Tim Boach, I think, like 2 weeks ago or whatever it was. He's another one of the victims of there's a lot of victims out there as far as being tied up and held hostage by one or two fighters, like all the featherweights and lightweights with Connor, and now you're seeing the middleweights, not just Yoel Romero that's getting screwed out of a title shot, it's also, you know, Jacare. He's, you know, now he's fighting Robert Whittaker, and yeah, he probably would have to fight one more fight anyways, but he's probably going to have to fight two or three more fights just to stay active, and he should beat Whittaker, but Whittaker's got a couple wins in a row, and he does hit hard, so, you know, those two fights, yeah, I like it. I dig it. I'm good with it.
Yeah, me too. And then the
That'll be the show where, and the weirdest thing that ever happened in MMA,
If he wins, Demetrius Johnson ties Anderson Silva for the most title defenses in UFC history. And that happened, like, in 3 years, and nobody's even noticed, which is weird. Like, the guy has quietly become the greatest champion in the history of the sport.
Yeah, do you think that's just because of his personality or more because of his size?
His personality factors in, the size factors in, and also the era he's in. There's a lot more going on. When Anderson was doing all of his stuff, there was nothing below 55. There was no women. You had, like, whatever, 5 or 6 titles.
Right.
In fact, you know, the night that he won the title was the night that they crowned the most recent modern UFC lightweight champion. So that really shows you that they did not have a lot of competition out there. And he was also in these mega dream fights with Chael that helped him and elevated him. So, you know, Demetrius Johnson, whatever, he's just going to do what he's going to do. He's a lighter weight guy. Ever going to be huge.
I think the other issue for him was he never really had, like, a foil, like a real rival. I mean, there was Benavidez. I mean, there's been some guys he's fought a couple times. But there was never, like, because you don't want to call him the babyface, but he's a nice guy. He never really says anything out of left field or really out there to get him much press. And he hasn't fought anybody who really has either. So it's like he needed somebody to, you know, be his foil, be the guy who's going to draw him out or draw attention to him. He just hasn't had that guy at all.
And honestly, the thing he needs to lose. Because whenever he loses, whoever beats him will become a star. It'll add some intrigue to the division. You'll have a right story that can carry on for a year or two. And while Mighty Mouse probably won't end up being a bigger star because of it, whoever beats him, if they were able to beat him, say Sergio Pettis, he goes out, he beats him twice and looks really good, he'll be able to be catapulted to another level from where Mighty Mouse is at.
Right.
And if he doesn't lose, he needs to have some epic fight where he barely wins and comes back like Anderson did. Because Anderson didn't, nobody gave a shit. He didn't do shit really in life until Chael came along.
Right, but I guess what I'm saying is there's no Chael at 125 either.
No.
Do you know what there's nobody who's going to say he sucks and he's a loser and I'm going to crush him. There's nobody, he hasn't had that guy yet.
And
it's not going to be Wilson Hayes either.
It's definitely not going to be Wilson Hayes. it's probably not going to be anybody in that division for a long time. It's the nature of the smaller guys. I don't know. Maybe it's because I see them as children. I don't think they can talk shit well enough, but I can't imagine some little munchkin saying anything and anybody going, oh, yeah, I'm really threatened by your 125-pound hand. Ooh.
Right, but, I mean, you're only talking 10 pounds up from Dominic Cruz and Cody Garbrandt, who can both talk shit. You know what I mean? Seems like there should be somebody. Maybe it's just there's less guys at 125.
I think that's probably a lot of it also, is that there are, you know, it's like a heavyweight. You get to the extremes on the bell curve, and you're just going to have less talent available. And, yes, there's more at 25 than there is at heavyweight. But 35, you get closer to the adult male population as far as size is concerned. Like the 125 pounds, that's a real outlier for males. Like, most men are not going to be that small. Right. Even cutting weight, that's a guy who walk around 140 and he's going to be noticeably short. Like, he will be short by anyone's definition. Dominic Cruz can stand around probably like 5'10-ish or so. And I'm sure, you know, if he didn't work out and stay in shape and ate and got bloated, he'd be like the skinny fat guy at 180 pounds. So it'd be like a lot of guys in IT, I guess.
It's too bad Ian McCall could never get going, because I feel like out at almost all the guys at 125, he's got the most potential to kind of be a draw. Like, I feel like he's got some personality, he's got a look, and he sticks out in that division. It's just, he can never make it to the cage, whether it's his fault or his opponent's.
How can you imagine if Ian McCall had been champion for the past 2 years? Like, Dana White would have probably had a heart attack by now.
Why? Because he's always hurt, you mean? Because
if he was a
champion, he's crazy.
Well, if he was a champion and all these fights kept pulling out and dropping in the last second through his fault or his opponent's fault, over and over and over again. You imagine if every Ian McCall fight was a canceled title fight? Holy shit. Like, that'd be awesome. I wanted that to happen just so we can read about it in the Las Vegas Sentinel. Whatever, I don't know. Whatever Aioli writes for when he does the obituary in Dana White. And there's like, he died at the hands of the mustached man.
We've also got Henry Cejudo versus Sergio Pettis at UFC 211 on May 13th. So Cejudo's just coming off that loss against Benavidez. You know, probably the third best guy, second best guy in the division, debatably, going against Pettis. So this is a big step up for Pettis. Do you like Pettis' chances in that fight at all? Or does he get taken down and just kind of beat up?
I like his chances, actually, because...
Really? Okay.
For a couple of reasons. One, it'll be three rounds.
Mm-hmm.
If it was five, he'd be in more trouble. It's easier to squeak by in three. Also, Cejudo stands a lot. He doesn't use the wrestling nearly as much as he should. And it's by choice. It's not like guys are able to stop it. He just doesn't want to do it. And the longer he stands, that's Pettis' world. And
right.
I think by the time Cejudo decides to try to take it down, he'll have already been rocked or a little tired, or he won't have been able to establish that distance. So I can see Pettis winning this for sure.
Okay. This coming weekend, we've got a UFC fight night. It's number 106 on Saturday, March 11th. It's in Fortaleza, Brazil, at the Centro de Formacao Olímpica do Nordeste. Don't know what that means. Center of something Olympic in the Northeast, I guess.
Olympic Center?
Something. I don't know. But, not surprisingly, it's a Brazil show, so we've got Vitor Belfort on it. He's in the main event against Kelvin Gastelum. Thoughts on Belfort and Gastelum? Old guy versus young guy. Is the old guy too old to be bloated welterweight?
This is a bad kind of fight for Vitor, sadly, because assuming he's clean and all that, as he's been lately, and therefore likely to lose, this is a guy that mentally breaks easily and physically can be broken, and Kelvin Gastelum is somebody that will take you out in that manner. He can drag this, make it ugly. So, plus Vitor's just old and he's melting in front of our eyes every single fight. It's just sad. So I'm going to go with Kelvin Gastelum. But I want to remind everybody, if you have a daughter who's under the age of, we'll say, 15, do not take her to Fortaleza. Hermes Franca may be running around. And you don't
Ooh,
want to get
that's an
running.
Old, that's a dated joke.
Yeah,
that's like
old. I like the old school callbacks. It makes me feel like that everybody know. That's right. I've been watching for a long time. I'm better than you.
I almost made a Mike Whitehead joke earlier. Do you think? What was I going to say? Do you know that Kelvin Gastelum was 5 years old when Vitor Belfort made his MMA debut?
Fuck, I feel old. Jeez, fuck, man.
He was just starting kindergarten when Vitor debuted in the MMA.
Is Gastelum 25?
Something like that, yeah.
Fuck me.
Yeah, he's 25 and Vitor is 39. And Vitor obviously started very young, but anyway. In the semi-main event, we've got Shogun Hua versus John Volante of, you know, his inhaler fame. Is this going to be – well, remember he failed that PED test last week because he was using an inhaler, and then he got the TUE.
Yeah, maybe – maybe the USADA asked the Brazilian commission what they should do. And the Brazilian commission said,
it's cool.
Said an inhaler, well, of course, a man needs to breathe. Go for it. We're not savages down here in Brazil, despite the fact that some of us live literally in the jungle like savages would. Yeah, we're a first world country, sure. Well, also, we have a bunch of stadiums that we built up for the World Cup and the Olympics. And guess what? we're not a big enough country to economically support stadiums that are in the middle of absolutely nowhere. So they're all dying and cracking and falling down. But it's okay, because we made sure that Whitey had to swim in shit in our wonderful ocean. Bay? Bay, maybe. Yeah, I'll go with bay.
It's probably... All right. Anyway, Shogun, believe it or not, is the seventh-ranked light heavyweight in the UFC.
Not. Yes, believe it or not. I go with not.
Believe it. I'm telling you. It's fact. This isn't fake news. He's also coming off two wins. Also, believe
it
or not.
Is that fake news?
That's legit.
You got two wins.
That is not some CNN bullshit. He beat Little Nog, and he also beat Corey Anderson, both by decision. And, I mean, overall, he's on a bad run here. It's a lot of win one, lose one, lose two.
That Little Nog fight was early August 2015.
That is correct.
Yeah, 2015.
He's fighting. Shogun's fighting once a year now. I mean, realistically.
God, that was on the undercard of the Ronda versus Betch-Kohea fight. Ronda's last ever victory.
Yes. So who do you like, Shogun or Volante?
Volante?
Me too.
And all new.
How come?
Because I think Shogun is a very old man who should crumble when he's hit by anybody resembling a younger man. And Volante does, in fact, resemble a younger man.
How old do you think Shogun is?
In people years, dog years, or Brazilian fighter years? Because in
like you and me, human.
Why'd you say you and me if you said human? One of us is not a normal human here. I'm a Neanderthal. I was bred out of existence. Slowly, over a period of thousands of years, and not murdered like people thought. How old is Shogun?
35.
I was going to say 34. God, he's just another one of those guys. He's not as bad as Nogueira is when I was like, hey, Nogueira looks like he's got to be 40. He's like 31 at one point. I'm like, oh, you're not going to make it. Like, they're alcoholics that look way better than you do, and they're in their 40s. Dude, you better really hope that they figure out how to cure that Parkinson and Alzheimer's and CTE real soon, because you're dead by 50.
Yeah. I don't know if that cure is coming anytime soon. Underneath that, we've got Edson Barboza versus Benil Dariush. Kind of an interesting fight. Two, you know, top 10 lightweights. Barboza's always good. He's just kind of got that chin that gets him into trouble sometimes. But I was looking at Edson Barboza earlier. Like, I think he's I'll pull it up. He is.
He's got
like
24 losses, I think.
Yeah, I think he's 20-4. But if he's 18-4, but listen to the four losses. I mean, Jamie Varner, that was kind of a fluke.
That's
but
a great fight, though.
It was awesome fight. Like, I don't know how that's a comeback fight. But anyway,
it was August 2012. August 2012.
May of 2012, UFC 146. But the other three losses.
Oh, no, I see Donald, Jamie Varner versus Joe Lauzon.
That fight was awesome, too. I like the Jamie Varner-Donald Cerrone feud, too. But anyway, we've got the Varner loss, Donald Cerrone, Michael Johnson, and Tony Ferguson. Like, if you're going to lose to four lightweights, that's not bad. And recently, he's coming off wins over Anthony Pettis and Gilbert Melendez. So I feel like people kind of gave up on Barboza based on those few losses. But they were against the most elite guys at 155. And now he's beaten, you know, a Pettis and a Melendez coming into this fight. So you would kind of like his chances against Dariush, who doesn't quite have that pedigree that Barboza does. But Dariush is more of a grappler, too, so I don't know if he's going to be able to use that to his advantage. How do you see this fight going?
It's a fight that Barboza should win. He's a very strong stopping takedowns, and on the feet, he's at a different level than most people. But Dariush is the kind of guy that Barboza really specializes in beating up on the feet. Because it's just somebody who's a striker who kind of plods, and Barboza's so good and so sharp. And Dariush, I mean, I like Dariush a lot. I think Beneil Dariush is an awesome fighter, a very fun fighter, and I'm probably underrating him here, if I'm being honest, because the guy has gone out, and he's the kind of guy that you just forget about, and then you go, oh, crap, look at that. He had really another win. Like, you just kind of, it's like the way he fights. He just kind of slowly gets you into a bad position, and next thing you know, you go, what the hell? Where did this come from? And the same with Dariush. Like, when did he show up as a top lightweight? So he could pull off the upset here, but it would still be an upset. And if you're picking somebody as an upset, you're admitting that he's not favored to win. So I would say that the odds are probably correct on this fight.
We have a flyweight fight prior to that with Hussier Formiga versus Ray Borg. Formiga's kind of quietly become one of the top, you know, flyweights in the UFC. He is currently ranked third. And he's coming off a win over Dustin Ortiz. You would think Formiga would be the favorite in this, yes, just based on his experience and everything else. His only losses in the UFC are Dodson, Benavidez, and Cejudo. Cejudo was a split decision. And that was kind of a title eliminator. People don't really remember it. But basically the winner of that went on to fight DJ, and Cejudo got the split decision win. Then you've got Ray Borg, who's a younger guy kind of coming up in the division now. He's only 23. He's been in the UFC for, you know, over 2 years, almost going to be 3 years now. And he's coming off a win against Lewis Smoka in a fight that a lot of people thought Smoka would win. So the big question mark is, can Borg make weight? He came in 4.5 pounds overweight for that fight. And he missed weight another time before that, too, by 1.75 pounds. So hopefully Borg can make weight. But, again, you'd think Formiga would be the favorite.
Yeah, I pick Formiga as a favorite. He's just a better overall fighter. And he's just outstanding on the ground. And I think he gets it down. And the fight's kind of similar to – it probably won't be similar to Dustin Ortiz. I think Dustin Ortiz was more willing to engage on the ground. But I still think Formiga is going to win. Let's not belabor the point.
Then we've got one of the biggest stars in Brazilian MMA history in Betch Correa taking on, where the hell am I? Marion Renault, probably the oldest fighter in the women's division at 39. I don't know what to say about that fight.
Just send pictures of your dick to Betch Correa at her Twitter. She likes it.
Yeah, that's the weirdest article I've ever seen for, like, one of the more mainstream MMA sites to write. And then in the rematch...
They were looking for something to tie in with International Women's Day. Think about it. The way it's presented, it's a feminist issue. It's online sexual harassment.
Maybe. I don't know if that article was written today. I just saw it getting tweeted out today. Maybe as a trolling article based on International Women's Day. Then in the opener of the main card on Fox Sports 1, we've got Alex Oliveira versus Tim Means. This is a rematch from just a couple months ago. And I know we talked about this fight where Means kneed Oliveira on the ground like twice. And there was confusion over whether or not those were illegal knees. And Joe Rogan got confused and Mark Ratner came on and got it completely wrong. I think you were at that fight, actually, so you didn't hear the commentary.
That reminds me from Saturday. I can't remember which fight it was, but somebody hit a really blatant illegal knee, and you heard the referee say, "What are you doing?" Which was like the best thing I've ever heard. Referee, like, he was like, "What are you doing? Are you retarded?" And the guy lost a point too. Like, he was like, "Dude, that was blatantly illegal. I'm right here. I can see you." It's like driving away, like pulling up to a cop and tipping your beer at him as you drive away. Like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, so this is a rematch of that fight, which actually kind of makes booking sense. I don't know what else to say about it except, you know, Means threw these knees and he acted like he didn't know the rule and thought they were legal, and he's been fighting MMA for, you know, 10 years. It was a very odd scene. Then on the undercard, not a whole heck of a lot.
Hanayaya. Yeah.
Versus Joe Soto.
That's a good
former
fight.
UFC pay-per-view main eventer.
We have a former UFC pay-per-view main eventer and a former WEC title challenger. So this is, I think Yaya's going to win, but I love Hanayaya's style. The original, he was Damian Maia before Damian Maia was Damian Maia.
Kevin Lee is also on the undercard. He's kind of got a little bit of a name going. I think he's coming off a loss, though, but he's a younger guy with some potential. I lied. He's 3-0 in his last three.
Is he black?
He is.
That's what I thought. I know my races.
Okay, and colors. What else is going on this weekend? We got a Mackenzie Dern fight, which is always fun. She's fighting on Friday night for Legacy. She's fighting against some no-name chick we've never heard of. Give me a second. Catherine Roy is her name. But again, Dern's the jiu-jitsu champion who's, I think, 2-0 now, maybe 3-0, with a lot of star potential who you'll probably see in the UFC in a few months, probably, I would guess, the way they're booking and promoting things.
I don't think that she'll get to the UFC, but I don't think she'll be successful in the long run.
No, you don't.
I don't. It's weird.
Even at 115.
Yeah, it's like, and the reason is weird, but it's like last September or whatever it was. Like I emailed her saying, hey, you want to do a podcast, an interview, and she had like a management team who responded, and mm-hmm. I was like, okay, that's weird, and like that's something that a new up and coming fighter shouldn't have. Like it's just like. Like, it's too many people controlling and protecting her. And, like, if somebody has to coddle her from interviews like that, then what else is she being coddled in? And you need to have that kind of – it's got to be kind of a tough road to the top or whatever. And plus when they're like, we're not doing any press right now, maybe after a fight, I'm like, why wouldn't you do press before the fight?
Right.
What? Something's off with you guys. So, I mean, again, her jiu-jitsu is outstanding and awesome and legitimate, but, yeah, fuck. She'll get in the UFC, and then again, Paige VanZant's in the top 10. I guess they all are.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you got to see where she goes. There's been a lot of jiu-jitsu champions who get into MMA and they, whatever, don't make it for whatever reason. Not everybody's Damian Maia. But at the same time, probably the thinnest division in MMA is, you know, 100, maybe not. You could maybe say men's heavyweight or something. But even so, it's a division where, you know, she's had trouble making weight. She's going to be bigger than a lot of these girls. She beat Gabby Garcia in jiu-jitsu. There's something there. But obviously she's a prospect, and we'll have to see how it pans out. As far as stuff goes, I'm not real familiar with this movie, but I know it's got to do with comic books or something. Logan, did you see that film?
I did.
And what did you think of it? You sound surprised I asked about that.
I kind of am.
I'm trying to broaden my horizons.
I love the movie. I thought it was outstanding. I was sad when it was over, both because the film ends kind of a sad way, which everyone knew going in, and also because, like, when the first X-Men movie came out in 2000, that was a big deal for me. I was in high school. I was in high school. I was going to start my senior year, but
oh my God, I can't believe like,
no, here's why. Before that movie came out, they had had Blade, which, you know, was based on a comic book character, but nobody cared. That was the first time a comic book movie was ever really good. Like, we're so used to comic book movies, like five of them a year now. Before X-Men came out, the last good comic book movie had been Batman Returns. It had been a long, long time. And even then, like, you had one good Superman, one and a half maybe, and two good Batmans, and that's it. And when the X-Men came out, and it was like, oh my gosh, they actually did these characters, and it was like the beginning of like this, wow. And that was, again, it was the beginning of the comic book movie boom, basically, and which took comic books from this nerdy thing I did in high school, in grade school and preschool. And suddenly now everybody's like, oh, yeah, I read comics too. Yeah, you read comics? Yeah, I like the indie comics. I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? This is – it's like I remember pro wrestling. Like one year it was like, you're dorky, like pro wrestling. And the next year it was, isn't Steve Austin awesome? And everybody liked pro wrestling for about 6 months. And suddenly my exhaustive knowledge of the history of pro wrestling was invaluable. I'm like, look at this. I'm getting invited to the cool kids party to watch Steve Austin. Oh, aren't I cool? And hindsight, not even close. For so many reasons, I was not cool. But yeah, I like the movie.
Good.
It was like the end of that. It was like the closing the chapter almost in my life. Like the X-Men came out as I was leaving high school, and now I'm an adult now. I'm a broken man, just like Wolverine is. I got nothing. And then so I'm like, I identify with the character.
Fair enough. Were you into video games at all much as a kid?
Of course I was.
I don't know. That's one topic we've never really discussed. Nintendo Switch came out this past week. We're going really nerdy here, but do you have any interest in that thing? Because it looks kind of cool. Like, I mean, I haven't played any video games since like Nintendo 64. We got a Wii, and my daughter liked playing that when she was little because you could just swing the, I call it a joystick or a remote, whatever you want to call that thing nowadays.
They call it a nunchuck.
Nunchuck, yeah, we had that too, the two pieces, whatever. And that was kind of fun, like Mario Kart, that sort of thing. We would play that together. And now my Wii is broken for the second time, so I'm thinking about getting a second system and for the kids. And I was thinking of getting the Switch because it looks like you can take it with you. You can play a bunch of people on it. It looks kind of cool. Am I a mark for Nintendo, or is this good for kids?
I have no idea. I don't play video games anymore. I haven't played them in years, but I grew up playing tons of them. I have a PlayStation 3. I think it's the 3 over there. It's not actually even hooked up to the TV because I only have so many HDMI ports, and I'm not going to sacrifice the Apple TV. So, and I've never, ever got into handheld video games. I just never played Game Boy or any of those things. But
just thinking like in the car and stuff. Yeah,
I could see where it would work for kids. Like, they would like the idea of, oh, it's a gimmick. Nintendo's always been about gimmicks, and I've always thought that was the great thing about Nintendo. Everybody else is making different titles and video games. Nintendo is not about video games. Nintendo is about entertainment. Like, well, you know, everybody else, all they've ever done is make your standard, I have a controller, I watch something on the TV, and I play it. Nintendo had the track and field where you jog. They had the power pack. They had the analog controller. Obviously the Wii was this giant. I mean, the Wii was a fucking revolution. People loved that. But gamers didn't. Gamers thought it was sucked. Because from a gamer's perspective, it had okay games, so nothing all that great. There's no great video games. But from a regular person's perspective, all you need is a Wii and Wii Bowling, and you can have a blast. Like, or Wii Sports in general. It's great for parties. People loved it. So, I guess, it's fucking, if your kids like it, they like it. The good thing about the Nintendo is you get Nintendo's characters. Nobody else has them. And kids really like that, the Pokemon and Mario and all that shit.
I agree. Do you think the Cowboys should release Tony Romo?
I think they already did.
That's the rumor. That's the word on the street. I don't know if it's official yet.
Well, they announced that they're releasing him, like, tomorrow.
Okay. And then, do you think the Patriots can get 2 first-round draft picks for Jimmy Garoppolo, their backup quarterback?
Yes.
And how ridiculous is that?
Because the Bears are really stupid. And,
Are they the team in the running for it?
They're one of the teams that's talked about.
Yeah.
A lot of that's wishful thinking because Garoppolo was from Eastern Illinois.
Okay.
Which is where my ex-wife
went. So it'd be the local boy coming home?
Yeah. I only know because my ex-wife went there. But Tony Romo also went there. So look, Garoppolo looked very good when he had to come in for Brady. But I wouldn't trust anything that comes out of New England. Like, I wouldn't trust a single player from New England on my team. Because Bill Belichick, he's a fucking wizard. And he goes out there, and he finds these guys, and he makes them look really good. And he flips them for a bunch of draft picks, and the guys go on, and then they're a bust. It's amazing. It's uncanny. But I can understand why a team would give up two first-round draft picks for Garoppolo, because if he is an actual franchise quarterback, all you have to do is look at Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, or really basically anybody who's ever won a Super Bowl except for the Ravens and kind of last year's Broncos. It's, if you don't have that great quarterback, you ain't getting the Super Bowl. It just doesn't happen. There's a reason Brady's got, you know, every other Super Bowl for the past two decades or something like that. Like, if Garoppolo is a franchise guy, oh, there's a lot of teams that have been going forever without a franchise quarterback. Just ask the Browns. Oh, they've had like 15 or 16 quarterbacks since Brady came in the league. So, you know, kudos to Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick. You're going to fleece somebody.
It's just amazing to me that they could get two first-round picks for him, because he doesn't have any kind of body of work, for one. I mean, he started, I think, 2.5 games last year before he got hurt. And, like, the Patriots are only going to get richer. You know what I mean? Two first-round picks. Who knows what they'll do with it? If you follow the Patriots, Belichick will probably trade the picks for, like, third and fifth, like eight third round picks. Just something crazy.
I was thinking, it's like, yeah, he'll take two first round picks and somehow have 12 second round picks, and everybody will be like, what the fuck just happened? Why? How do they draft an entire new offensive and defensive line? That's not possible.
But yeah, I mean, it's like the rich get richer in theory. I mean, obviously Brady's going to get old at some point. I think he's going to be 40 at the start of this next season. But,
Brady's a crazy man. He's going to last. He's going to be healthier than other people for a while, because he doesn't eat like fruits. He's so strict about his diet.
I don't know if that's because of Giselle or if that's him, but he's actually started. He's like selling some kind of food.
Yeah, he's been suckered into it. He's been conned by some jackass trainer guy who's got him. Like Giselle eats fruit at least. Like Tom Brady won't eat fruit, and
it's strawberries. I know he doesn't like.
He's never had one. He's never had a strawberry in his life.
He claims to have never had coffee either.
I've never actually had a whole cup of coffee.
Fuck off! How is that possible?
I find coffee disgusting. I tried it once. I'm like, this tastes awful. And I tried it a couple years later. I'm like, nope, that's still awful.
But can't you say that about beer or cigarettes?
I don't drink beer, okay. And I don't smoke cigarettes. So,
okay.
To me, it's exactly like beer, in that people are always like, well, you know, it's an acquired taste, which is just code for you learn to like it. Well, I'm a grown-up. I don't need to learn to like things, especially if they're not, like, inherently good for me. Fine. If I learn to like broccoli, that benefits me. If I learn to like beer, that's not going to be good for me. There's plenty of other alternatives, and for all of my vices I have, and that list is long, I've never gotten hooked by the caffeine, and I'm really grateful for it. Like, I wake up in the morning, I'm like, boom, I'm awake, let's go. And even my mother, my pious mother, who doesn't swear and couldn't think an evil thought if you paid her to, she drinks coffee throughout the day. So I'm saying that I'm going to heaven, and she's not.
Did you see, speaking of coffee, I wasn't even going to go in this direction, but we can talk about Tom Brady's food delivery service in a minute. Caffeine could be headed to the World Anti-Doping Agency's prohibited substance list. Did you see this?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, that's the latest for WADA. They're talking about, I guess in the past, caffeine was on the list. If you had a certain amount of caffeine in your system, it was... Hang on a second.
I can see that. That makes sense. I mean, it is
opened up a webpage.
It is
talking to me.
It is a stimulant.
Essentially, it used to be on the list, and they took it off. But there's like a certain threshold, and they compared it to having like four venti, which is the big one at Starbucks, four venti coffees in like a 2-hour window. Fail. But I guess the idea is caffeine technically is a stimulant. Obviously, it's not a super strong stimulant, but I guess maybe I don't even know how you use it. Like, if you were gonna, I don't even know if you're weightlifting, take a bunch of caffeine pills and then go try and, you know, there's some weights. I don't even know how it would really help you in a sport, but apparently some people think it's an issue.
Well, again, it is a stimulant. You get a little bit of energy. I could see it for anything where it's a race, like swimming or running. If you time it right, you get that burst of energy. A lot of wrestlers and people like that do it, where they'll take a caffeine pill just to get themselves a little bit of extra juice. And especially if you're not somebody that takes caffeine all the time. If you're a regular coffee drinker, you probably aren't going to get a lot out of it. But if somebody like me goes out there and takes a caffeine pill or two, I'm going to be like, holy shit, I'm wired. Like, my eyes are going to be wide open. I'm going to be like, I'm ready to go, motherfuckers. So I guess it could kind of be a stimulant. But
but you'd be all, like, jittery and, like, twitching, you know? Like, I don't know how it would really help you. A lot of people are like, seriously, Wada, like, you can't have coffee. But that that's not really what they're saying. They're saying, yeah, you can have coffee, but your caffeine level can't be ridiculously off the charts because maybe it can help you. I don't know.
And it's not safe. I mean, if you have too much caffeine in your body, that's not healthy. That could screw with your heart and everything. And we all know that over the years, elite athletes have one common thing, which is they all get sick a lot and need a lot of therapeutic use exemptions. Like, all these people, they're very sensitive group of people. They get sick. We got to help them.
Yeah, I never really drank coffee until I had kids. Sometimes it's tough to get up in the morning. Now I'm like 3 cups a day. Like, I was just drinking coffee now to stay awake for this. I'm okay. So Tom Brady, we were talking about this, is teaming up with a vegan delivery brand called Purple Carrot for TB12 performance meals. TB12 obviously stands for Tom Brady, number 12. That's the number on his jersey. A 3 times per week service that includes fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and directions to create simple but delicious plant-based meals. Brady claims, so many times people ask me, what do you do? Well, this is one of the answers. So he's trying to help people out because everyone's always bugging him about what he eats and how he stays so healthy and how he's the best quarterback ever, which probably does happen to him. But obviously this is another way for him to make some money. He's trying to catch up to Giselle's yearly salary. So basically these meals are made without gluten, dairy, eggs, seafood, meat, or any processed foods. Just so you don't get upset, it does not mention GMOs in this. The meals range from
a head of lettuce.
They range from crispy turnip cakes with tabbouleh and white lentil risotto with roasted veggies to ramen with ginger greens and broccolini. They are high in protein and limit the use of soy and any refined sugars.
Look, Tom Brady ain't eating that shit. He's got meat in his diet. You can't be healthy and not have meat. Like, you have to have meat to be healthy, you vegan morons. It's just a fact. I can't stand vegans. They're the worst human beings on the planet.
God. I disagree with that, not surprisingly.
My cousins, my family, they're all vegans.
Here's the thing. The vegan, I've got 2 thoughts on vegans. I don't need to know you're a vegan. You don't need to push it on me.
You do know. Oh, everybody knows if you're a vegan.
But hang on. Part of me, like, I eat crap. My diet sucks. I don't really care. But at the same time, I respect vegans in a way because it's hard. It's a pain in the ass. It's a lot of work. And I mean, morally, they kind of have a point, I guess. Again, I'm not, and I don't want to hear about your veganism, but I kind of can understand where they're coming from, which it doesn't sound like you do at all.
Oh, I understand what they're doing. they have a stance ethically, not morally. Vegan.
Sorry.
What?
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Nobody cares. But, like... Vegetarians, I get that, and, like, I wouldn't – if I could be a vegetarian, I would. There's no need to eat meat other than I just like the way it tastes. That's it.
You just said you need to eat meat to be healthy.
Well, you need the proteins from it. But you need, but you can get that from dairy products as well. Like, you can eat eggs and get a lot of the protein you need. It's really the vegans, because they don't have any dairy in their system either. That's where they really get screwed up. But veganism, is just, it's not healthy. You have to take all the...
Has there been, like, is that factual? Or
No. That's actually factual. That's not me making something up and making fun of them. Like, it's not a healthy diet. They suffer from, I think it's it might be B12, but like severe deficiencies in certain vitamins, and they have to take supplements in order to get through it, which is like, that undermines their whole, well, this is ethical and moral. It's like, well, if that's the case, then why is it not healthy? The only reason it would be ethical and moral in that sense would be because God tells you to do it, and you don't have any evidence of that one. Otherwise, you'd have to go by what nature is telling you and is giving you positive feedback on, and they're not giving you positive feedback on veganism. Vegetarianism, perhaps, but really they give you positive feedback on a balanced diet. Pigs are cute, so that's kind of why I wouldn't eat them. Cows are pretty dumb.
So superficial.
Oh, no, it's absolutely superficial. But like, chickens, I have no problem eating because it's a fucking dumbass animal. There's no brain in a chicken. Any animal you can cut the head off and it still moves, you're allowed to eat that. That's fine. That's not even a living thing. I mean, it's living, but like a plant is living. It just clucks and does things, and it's a fucking chicken. Idiots are stupid. I could kill a chicken, I think. I don't think I could kill a cow. That'd be tough. I'm just walking up to and shooting a cow on the fucking side of the head. I wouldn't want to do that. Because even, like, if I fucked it up and I missed, or I didn't kill it, now I just shot a cow in the head and it's pissed.
Right. Do you feel that's hypocritical, though? Like...
Yes.
Okay. Me too.
I know it is.
Okay. Like, I'll eat it. I just don't want to be the one that kills it. I'm that way. Like, I can readily admit it. Like, I'm a hypocrite. Like, I love a good steak. I love a filet. Whatever it might be, I'll eat lamb. I'll eat pretty much anything if I go out to eat, and I'll try whatever they've got that's even weird because I want to see what it's all about. But at the same time, it's like in the back of my mind, I feel bad for that cow.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of the things where I draw a distinction between ethical and moral. To me, ethical is circumstantial. It's circumstance based. Whereas morality, it's rigid. It's a bright line. It doesn't change depending on the circumstances of the facts. And I don't see anything inherently wrong with dairy. Now, the way that we collect dairy can be unethical because we put these chickens in a thing. We make them we pump them full of food, and they squat out the eggs, and they never see sunlight.
Eggs aren't dairy.
Yeah, they are.
Eggs are not dairy. Yes. Dairy comes from a cow. Eggs are from a chicken.
Yeah, I know, but vegans don't eat them.
Right, but it doesn't make it dairy.
It's in the dairy aisle.
So
it's next to the butter.
You can't be dairy if you come out of an egg.
Well, I'm going to count it as dairy for the purpose of this.
It's from a chicken.
Fine. Fuck the chickens. It's like you have these cows, and they just sit in these pens.
Holy shit. They have tortillas in the dairy aisle sometimes that are, like, refrigerated. That doesn't mean it's dairy.
What fucking grocery store? Are you going to, like, a Mexican grocery store?
Boy. I was trying to think of something that I've seen in the dairy section that was clearly not dairy to help you understand the difference between chickens and cows.
I know the difference between a chicken and a cow, damn it. I've had sex.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means.
But again, going back to the original point that it's going to be intelligent, the manner by which we collect, I'll go with dairy now. I'll go with cow milk. Milk,
yeah.
Squeezing it out of an udder, the way that we do it by factory farming and all that stuff, that can be unethical, but it's not inherently wrong. Just squeezing milk out of a cow doesn't hurt the cow. In fact, the cow is needed at times. So drinking milk is not inherently wrong, just the method by which we acquire it. So therefore, I can say I can consume this. I just have to either find it a better way, or I can blame the system or whatever. Whereas eating meat, I can see the argument for that being inherently wrong, because there's just under the perfect circumstances, there's no good way to kill something and grill it. Like, there's a good way to collect an egg. There's a good way to get some milk. There ain't no good way to slit some cow's throat.
I think the argument vegans make, though, is that a lot of it's based on how the animals are treated as well.
That's what I'm saying.
The cow's going to be penned up and in the cage. The dairy cow, even. You know what I mean?
Again, that's why I say it's unethical, because the milk that we get comes from unethical means, which is probably true. But it's not immoral, because there's a way to get it without it being wrong. So to me, the vegans are taking it's faulty logic, because what they're really saying is they want improvements in the way that we do something, and therefore until we get it done, we shouldn't consume it. That's fine. I can accept that as an argument. But I look at my cousin, the farmer. She's very happy. They just got a dairy cow. They just got one. And she named it Bessie, and she milks it herself. That cow is fine. There's nothing wrong with that, and you should be able to drink that milk all day long, even though it's not pasteurized and it probably tastes weird. But you can just be able to suck that right out of the udder. That's fine. And so I'm with the vegans. Like, there's no real ethical way to really eat dairy or eggs or whatever, unless you do it yourself. But since I can say someone did it themselves, I'll just tell myself, no, these eggs that cost a buck for 12 jumbo eggs, totally on the up and up. Some farmer loved these hens and just petted them, and they all ran around, and they just actually walked over to the farmer and deposited the eggs to him, saying in their chicken language, there's no baby in here, so it's going to go to waste. I bet you could do something good with this. Here, I give this to you as tribute. Those are the eggs I eat.
Do you have any food allergies?
None.
No, me neither. A lot of people do.
I wonder if they do, if they're just like wieners. They're just like whiny people.
Like they're allergic to hot dogs, you mean?
Yeah. Like, nobody's allergic to gluten, you liars.
That is not true.
Like, five people have celiac disease.
I agree. It's a diet fad right now, just like Atkins was, whatever, 20 years ago, or low carb, whatever the current craze is. Gluten's definitely a diet thing now, and people don't want gluten in their diet, which, whether or not it's going to help you lose weight or whatever, I don't know. But there are people who are legit will get – some people are, like, just intolerant, meaning, like, they'll get a stomach ache or the shits. And some people are truly, like, allergic. Like, they'll have a medical reaction and, you know, have to go to the hospital or whatever. But those people are more rare. Like, in obviously the restaurant business, it's a big deal. People come in and they're concerned because they're allergic to peanuts or tree nuts or shellfish or dairy or eggs. So it's a thing. And I was just wondering if you ever had any issues with it, because the whole vegan thing got me thinking about, because that's another one where people come in and they say, you know what, I'm vegan or I don't eat meat. Is this okay? And it's a lot of work to try and ascertain what some people are allergic to and special diets and that sort of thing. But I guess that's the
I always wonder about
life I've chosen to live.
I wonder, or the life that's been thrust upon you. I wonder about people that have some of these food allergies. Like, I appreciate there are people that, you know, obviously that they're allergic to things. You see these poor bastards with peanuts and they just blow up and die if it's even near them.
Yeah.
I don't know how they exist in the world. I don't know how evolution did not take care of this. I'm not being facetious there. Like, it seems like something that should just been like, well, that gene's not going to get passed on, because anytime it's near this very harmless legume, it dies. So let's get rid of that gene.
Yeah, I think, but maybe what's happened too is food has changed so drastically over the last 100 years. It's so much more food available that probably a lot of people weren't exposed to peanuts 100 years ago.
Yeah, I guess it's possible. I don't even know why you'd be allergic to it. It seems like these allergies are weird, like shellfish. Yeah, shellfish. I don't know why you'd be allergic to it. And I wonder if some of these people wouldn't have been allergic to them if they had been basically inoculated by it over time in their childhood. Because, like, you don't see – I'm guessing there's not too many Japanese people allergic to shellfish. And I'm wondering if they got exposed to it in little amounts younger as they were young, and so they got used to it. Whereas, if you're like me, as landlocked as you can get, I mean, there's no such thing as actual fresh fish, you know, seafood in Chicago. Like, we can do as best we can, but you ain't getting no lobster right off the coast like you guys can up there in Maine and with all your, you know, lighthouses. Those magnificent facilities.
Yeah, they're a little outdated at this point with GPS, I think. But yeah, basically all allergic reactions are like the body's defense mechanism against what it perceives as like harmful. So it's a weird thing your body does. It's like your throat closes up because your body thinks what you're eating is bad. It's weird. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they really know why some people are and some people aren't, because there's no cure for it. If you're allergic to peanuts, you're allergic to peanuts, and you better stay the fuck away from them, or you're going to be going to the hospital. I mean, like,
your body's sitting there, and it's just like, oh no, watch out for that wheat. I'm going to close up my throat. Okay.
It's weird.
You're not going to make it. Wheat's pretty plentiful. Nobody's allergic to meat.
There's like eight. There's eight big ones that are super common. And I mean, you kind of know them. It's dairy, eggs, soy, wheat, shellfish, fish, tree nuts, and peanuts. Yeah, that was eight.
What's a tree nut?
Ones that don't like peanut, like grows from the ground, I think. But tree nuts are like walnuts, like that sort of thing. Peanuts are weird. They're not like your typical nut. I think that, like you said, it's technically a legume. Like, it's a sort of bean, I guess, technically, is a peanut. But tree nuts are like everything else.
Oh, yeah. These people would never survive in the Pacific Islands.
I don't know if coconut is the same thing. Anyway, I don't know how we got there. Anything else going on in the world that we need to talk about tonight?
Next week's show may not happen.
Okay, what are you doing?
I'm going to Denver on Tuesday, and I come back to Chicago on Wednesday, but I don't leave Denver till like 7 o'clock Denver time. So okay. The only way that we could do it would be Tuesday night in Denver, and you'd have to record it.
Okay. So I don't know how to do that.
You just download a program. And it just
That sounds complicated.
Yeah, it just runs in the background. Probably should have talked about this elsewhere, but I don't care.
No, this is good. Behind the scenes stuff. People love this sort of thing. Yeah, I don't know. I know I'm actually working Tuesday night next week.
All right, we'll figure it out.
What are you going to Denver for?
Fun.
For one day?
Yeah, I got time off, and the Frontier Air had super, they had like special deals on flights, and so my total cost round trip, including taxes, is $50.
Okay.
I was like, $50? I can't like come into the city of Chicago for $50, so I'll go to Denver for a day. Yeah, why not?
Sounds good to me.
Yep, and that's it. That's all I got.
It sounds good. We're finishing strong here. All right. Well, thanks for listening to MMA and stuff. We will possibly talk next week, or it might just be Mike solo, which is always probably more entertaining. Anyway, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
I'm finished.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike Coughlin for HalfGuarded.com. If anybody's actually listening to this part, I'll be surprised. But I realized, as a practicing attorney, I should probably mention somewhere, like they do in the movies, the motion pictures, that everything you've heard is exclusive copyright and trademark and every other legal designation permitted within the United States or any other grid country. HalfGuarded.com owns everything you just heard. Nobody else does. If they stole it from us, I will find you and I will kill you because I have a special set of skills. Also, anybody that's listening to this, email mike@halfguarded.com. I've never really used email, but I can get shit from it. If you've actually heard this, I'm not kidding, I will send you $5 via PayPal.
I'm really curious to see if anybody in the world will ever fucking hear this. $5 for somebody. I'll probably do it for everybody that listens, unless it gets out of control, and then I'll just delete this part. But until that time comes, everything you heard is property of the halfguarded.com website. Bye. Oh, and yes, I'm aware that putting in a copyright thing at the end of a podcast where I've probably stolen music from somebody else is weird, but I promise to pay those artists if they ever request it. Halfguarded.com. Go!